With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And what else would we be doing on a sunny bank holiday Monday than sitting in a room with no windows,
yeah,
overheating, talking about rugby? I'm Tim, that's JB right there.
Hello, Timothy.
That is Phil.
Hello, Tim.
You know where you can find us, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. And you need to be watching that feed this week because, well, we'll get into that in a little bit, but some interesting things are going to be going on, Facebook, Instagram, all the rest of it. We're here on a bank holiday Monday because, well, I don't think either of you two would have been able to face a podcast yesterday after your exertions on Saturday.
We worked very, very hard.
As ambassadors for the podcast.
As ambassadors for the podcast, as guests of HSBC at the London Sevens. Mm. And we were working so hard on Saturday. We were
so hard,
flat out exhausted all day Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, we really put in the hours, to be fair.
Well, we were up at 6 a.m.
We were. We spoke about nothing but rugby all the way down, so we've formed all of our thoughts before all the games happened.
Yes.
So we don't need to update them, because no doubt we were right. And that was it, really. massive thanks to the guy who made it happen. Ryan Kersel.
Kiesel.
Sorry, Ryan.
Long-time listener of the pod.
And all-round good bloke.
With some great stories, which I can't repeat on the podcast. I'd love to.
I would have loved to have accepted the invitation as well, but I found myself at Allianz Park.
It's all right, we've got 3 more years of it, so.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
How was Allianz Park?
Oh, it's very good, but more to the point, what the hell are you doing on a Sunday morning, bearing in mind it's bank holiday weekend, getting a train at 7 a.m?
Well, I didn't get the train. The first train was at 9 a.m. So I was up, I left, me and JB stayed at his sister-in-law's flat in Notting Hill. But I checked the Sunday service and there was engineering works on the line and United were playing at home.
Were playing at home?
Yeah, Bayern Munich's charity game.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's only like 20,000 people went to that and they're not all coming from London.
There was a lot of Cockneys with United shirts
on. So here's something, right?
On the train that I was on.
Just an aside. So I actually watched the highlights. I don't know why I watched highlights of this game, but I did watch highlights of that game. I understand why United would put out a team for it. I do not understand for the life of me why Bayern Munich would send 11 guys over to celebrate one of the most famous losses.
Yeah, one of the worst ways to lose a game when you're leading 1-0 with seconds left on the clock.
Yeah, I mean, like, when Tok H are not going to send a decade anniversary team to Oldham to celebrate when we lost one point.
Could you imagine Northampton celebrating their 2012 loss to Leicester?
Leinster.
When they were 20 points up at half time.
Wait for it. We got 2023, only 4 years to wait for the memorial, England v Wales at Twickenham.
Oh, can't wait.
Robshaw leading.
Wait, why would Robshaw want to
be 15?
There's the 13, 30 points to 3 hammering
in Cardiff.
And then there's the 2015 World Cup.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Hi, Chris. Do you fancy just coming to lead the team out for your worst ever performance?
Say it again, Chris. We always back ourselves at home.
Anyway,
I wanted to get up and beat the rush.
Go on, name drop who you were hanging out with in the HSBC.
No one you would have heard of, to be fair.
No?
No.
There's a few guys you might have
heard of. They no longer play, so you know, you wouldn't have heard of them. Bruno Driscoll, come across him?
Did he play rugby?
He used to play, yeah. Oh, okay. There's a Sevens player there, Brian Habana. He had a, from what I understand, listening to him, he had a little stint on the Sevens circuit a while back.
Played a bit of Sevens, yeah.
Yeah, Maggie Alfonsi. And there was James Haskell, a famous DJ.
Likes his DJing, does a bit of personal training.
He's a PT, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's a PT entrepreneur.
He trains rugby players.
I think so. I think he knows a few. So all in all, it was pretty good, actually.
That sounds awesome.
It was good fun hanging out with. We got a bit of time when a lot of other people were out watching the Sevens action.
We were working.
We were tucked away working, watching the second semi-final, and Bod came over. And just spent probably, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour just chatting various things.
The one I feel sorry for, by far, is Maggie Alfonsi, because she had to listen to my theories about why England lost the World Cup final to New Zealand on repeat.
We had a great chat with Maggie as well, actually. She was really interesting.
She's excellent.
Very impressive. But Brian, so there was an element of when he came over, because we'd had a little chat with him before. I'd like to think he thought we were relatively normal compared to some of the people there. And as an example of what one of the guys asked him, a Russian dude who was quite nice but a bit drunk and a bit bonkers, came over and at one point asked Brian O'Driscoll, has he ever been to Dublin?
No.
Yeah. You mean outside of my entire life?
Yeah.
Apart from that.
The actual rugby for the Sevens as well was brilliant.
Yes, it is. Worth saying, not for England, who are struggling to get to the Tokyo Olympics now.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a really tricky one, that, right? Because I don't really support any team, and I certainly could not care less what England do. But I think if you go to Sevens, I don't think you should go with supporting a team in mind, because you've got to wait so long. You've just got to appreciate that every game is pretty awesome. And they are, generally speaking, they are.
Oh, there's some awesome games. I mean, there was a couple of complete one-siders. The first game we watched, South Africa hammered Japan 49-0. Mm. And no one's getting anything from that game. But there were some other games that were, like the Scotland and Ireland performances against some bloody good teams. Like the Ireland performance against Fiji was just phenomenal. So
USA are very impressive too.
Yeah,
now
USA.
Just looking, eyeballs only, without looking at any stats or anything, USA seem a lot more powerful than most other teams. They look physically bigger, but I don't know if that can be backed up.
Well, they've got some big boys, but then they've always got at least one of
the absolute speed
merchants. Perry Baker.
Speed merchants.
And then what's his name? Barrett.
Barrett.
Barrett bounced off. I can't remember who that was.
He's a big boy.
I think he's against Australia.
Yeah, he's got 15s potential, I would say.
I mean, he's played quite a bit of 15s. He was at Cardiff for a bit, wasn't he?
That's not really reaching your potential, going to Cardiff. That's no one's idea of reaching your potential, playing at Cardiff.
Well, I think this is the route to the American audience, though, as much as I'd love it to be through the Gallagher Premiership. And
I don't know if it is. I mean, I've got... I think Sevens is so specialised now. We had this conversation on the train. Is it taking away from the 15s?
Well, yeah, I think they're in competition with each other. I've said it before, right? I think they should have gone to 10s, not 7s, because then you could have players moving between codes.
Yeah, I think you're right on
easier.
That.
Yeah. Now, there are people who've done in both directions, like McConaughey at Bath, his first season playing 15s, and has looked brilliant. Marcus Smith being another one, who played highest level.
James Davis.
Won a silver medal. Yeah. Davis has gone forward and backwards, hasn't he? But yeah, there's some who do both.
Did you say England won't make the Tokyo Olympics?
Well, it's possible.
Isn't it Great Britain that makes
the GB? But they sort of amalgamate and aggregate points, and I think is how they work it. But basically, England not doing very well this season is dropping them down, dropping the aggregate rankings of those four nations will want to be as GB, dropping them down to the point where they might not qualify for the Olympics, which would be a...
Well, there is another code of rugby which is making a... it's going to be introduced, and we can talk about that later, actually.
All right.
But I've got some things to talk about on Rugby X.
One last thing on the Sevens.
Okay.
Ross Tucker on Twitter, who we'll come on to in a little bit because of some World Rugby, World Rugby announcement.
Do we have to?
But he,
yeah, it's fine.
He made quite an interesting point on Twitter when they were discussing Sevens. And his view was that the action is so transient that... So by that he means... And I think he's right in this. There is some phenomenal bits of skill. Absolute unbelievable
Australia, for instance.
Bits of skill in the Sevens. But because a single bit of skill rarely has a significant influence on an individual game in the way that a magnificent bit of skill like the Rory Hutchinson offload, which didn't ultimately have an effect on the game but changed the dynamic at that time, because it doesn't have a long-term impact on the game because there are so many highlights, the action has moved on really quickly. And not having, as Jade mentioned before, not having... So one team will play, then they'll play like 3 hours later. So you have like 10 minutes of action that you're interested in, and then 3 hours later you'll have another 10 minutes. So that transience means it's easy to dip into, but it's very easy to like be enthused about it for a very long period of time.
I completely agree with that. So if you look at the crowds, actually, the crowds are basically there for a party, which is absolutely great. I mean, I have no issues with that. But what I am saying is you don't, or very rarely do you find people who follow the Seventh Circuit.
If you do
find a person that follows the Seventh Circuit, actually, you know, spends their own money going to all the different countries, you probably don't want them on your speed dial. So that's how I put it. It's more of an event than...
It's like cricket.
It's very similar
to
cricket.
You go and it's the context for a bit of a knees up.
Yeah.
And you'll zoom in and zoom out of the actual action on the pitch.
Very similar to cricket.
You can dip in so quickly when there's a bit of action, but then immediately you've forgotten about it and you're on to... necking your 15th beer or whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to go to a Grand Prix, an F1 Grand Prix, because that's like a whole weekend of drinking, and you have to then stop and then watch a race, and then you can go back to drinking. Then there's all lots of events, and then there's a race, and you can watch that, and then you can go back to drinking. It sounds like a great way to spend a weekend.
Yeah. And the Monaco Grand Prix this weekend, a lot of the Talon boys were there.
Oh, were they?
That looked like a good way to spend a weekend.
Isn't it just? I'd love to do that.
So we will come back and talk about that rugby X you mentioned. We've got lots of rugby to talk about, so we'll get on with that. But just to say, we'll have a Premiership preview / Negroni Party announcement podcast in your feed this week.
Yes,
so
we
hit
will.
Subscribe. Ooh. But we still feel bad about not doing a live podcast in 2019. So we thought we can't let the year end without having done one. We couldn't do one.
It'd be unethical.
Yeah, it would be. We couldn't do one in the Six Nations because Phil selfishly impregnated Claire and had young Thomas. I mean, we're always going to like Thomas, Phil, but
we'll always hold it against him as well, won't we?
Hold that against him. But
I keep reminding him.
Good, but maybe not. Maybe the slate can be wiped clean because we do have a live podcast in 2019. It's going to be a World Cup preview podcast at Twickenham the week before the World Cup starts, and we're also using it as an Egg Chasers Negroni party and a JB FRFU
20,
Council.
2021?
JB 2020 or 2021.
Whatever the date is, we'll be using it for that date.
Yeah, to launch that campaign officially. So it should be a lot of fun. So we want you to be there. The official announcement will be in your feed very, very soon. We can't wait to see you. So, do you want to go Pro 14 or Prem?
I haven't seen a single second of Pro 14, so there's no point in doing that. Let's do Prem, because you were there.
I was at the first game, yeah. I watched the second game on intermittent signal on my phone whilst getting a train back to Manchester.
Dreadful stuff.
But
So there's a few things. First of all, I kind of think that Saracens now, this isn't the game action, but do you think they've turned the corner in terms of supporters and filling that stadium? And so I always thought like the rugby's been in place, but the thing that they're missing now is actually the support base and people going to watch. Do you think they've largely solved that? Because it looked absolutely bouncing on TV.
It was bouncing. I think it's worth pointing out as well that from the guys from BT Sport that were in Newcastle for the Champions Cup final said that there were loads of Saracens fans.
Yeah.
And that they had a huge part to play in a brilliant atmosphere. So there might be something in that.
It feels like because they've now got the stadium and they've been there for, it must nearly be, well, it feels like at least 5 years now.
There was a lot of Gloucester fans, it's fair to say, and they were very noisy. And that you could tell that it was a team that hadn't been to that stage in 8 years because they were filling their boots.
Last days in Rome.
Yeah. The Gloucester fans were absolutely loving it.
There was a picture when Dreyer went over for the one of the two consolation tries towards the end of the game. There was a shot on TV of a Gloucester fan, a middle-aged Gloucester fan, like cheering, both arms cheering and shouting, like it was almost like Gloucester had just won the game, But no, they just scored a consolation try against Saracens in a 40-point hammering.
That was the disappointing part of this whole game. Is I was so hoping that both these semi-finals, in fact, would be close. They were. It was seriously one-sided.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Gloucester could win. I really thought they could.
Well, you backed them.
Yeah.
Not only to win this game, but to win the whole thing.
Well, I thought if they could get through this one, they could definitely get through Exeter. I honestly thought that. That's why that's why Saracens are three times champions and I do a podcast from my basement. So,
you're one of three virgins in the basement.
Yes.
And also, I mean, imagine if we'd have said in the semi-final, Brad Barrett, your man, Brad Barrett's going off after 25 minutes.
Game over.
You said game over. It's done. Gloucester definitely win him.
Yeah.
I know Tompkins was ace. Did he get a hat-trick or just... Yeah.
He did. Crikey. He did get a 55-minute hat-trick.
I'm really unsure about
how... He's got wheels as well as being a big unit.
I'm really unsure how you go about beating Saracens. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know. And they are far more than I said about them in the lead-up to this game, mostly because I was trying to convince myself that Gloucester would win. But like, some of the rugby that they played was outstanding.
Yeah, but can I just emphasise what you're saying when you're going, you don't know how to beat Saracens. Mark McCall, after the game, was like, we played okay, we were good for 10 minutes before half-time and we were good just after half-time, but other than that, there's lots we need to work on.
Yeah, but isn't that what they always do? It's like, apparently Sir Alex Ferguson used to lose his mind when United would win 3-0 because, it's just not good enough, you're sloppy here, there, and that's when you play well, you turn the screw on standards. When you play poorly, you let them off with quite a lot and then build up again.
Interesting you say that. I used to work for a boss and that was exactly his philosophy, and... So quite often in radio, what you do is you get your ratings every quarter, and when they're really good, you go, let's go down the pub, let's all get hammered. That happened for Virgin Radio last week, who had incredible...
Obviously.
Incredible.
Did it happen for Chris Moyles
incredible ratings. I don't think they were having... His ratings in Manchester are still below where mine were 3 years ago when I left that show. But
Just saying.
Anyway, so we went out, so there was a big Virgin Radio knees up last week when the ratings came out. But actually, a boss of mine in the past has said that when things are going really well, that's the time to actually have the meeting and dissect. Why has it gone so well? What learns can we make? And how could we even build on it further? And when you lose sometimes, or when it doesn't go well, that's actually the time to go, do you know what? Don't worry about it.
Go on the pub.
Let's go down the pub.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly right. That's Steve Diamond's style management, that mate. Mm. Yeah, when it doesn't go too... In fact, actually, they like going on the pub. Quite a lot anyway,
yeah.
To be fair. But they sometimes do it when they lose as well, is what I'm saying.
So one of the disappointing things, and maybe I'm reading into this wrong, but one of the disappointing things for me on the Gloucester performance, take the performance out of it, but if you look at some of the social media stuff after the game, there was a lot of kind of like happy smiling faces, a lot of the Gloucester boys going on the piss, but so it's good that they enjoy being around each other. There was an element of me reading into it, and this could be completely wrong, but me reading into it, oh, we were just happy to be there. Which I don't think will be quite right, but some of them came across like that.
Okay, so having said what I've just said, I guess this might contradict it a bit, but there's a John Madden quote, and John Madden spent a long time getting to the playoffs and not winning the Super Bowl. And people will say, do you feel under pressure? Do you feel... you feel like you should resign, you're taking the team as far as you can, blah, blah, blah. And he always said, no, I'm not under pressure. The people who are under pressure, the guys who haven't won a game or have got less than 50% record. And in my mind, actually, I think it's fine for them to say, right, happy to be there, let's all go home. Wouldn't be fine for Saracens to do that, and it wouldn't be fine for Exeter to do that, but it is fine for Gloucester to do that, I think.
Right now, yes.
Next
but
year,
it,
no.
It can't continue to be fine. So, yeah, I am with that, but they've got to... You've got to see improvement every year. And so Gloucester finishing third is great. Gloucester will be aiming to finish third or higher next year.
Mm.
But also they'll be aiming to at least improve their performance in the semi-final. And you've got to see that continual improvement. Because this Gloucester team is a bloody good team.
It is good.
They've got some brilliant players right across the board. They're cohesive as a unit. They did not show it in this game. But they've got a good team. And they can do more than they did today.
And as
or
a club,
yesterday.
I think they are in as healthy position as anyone, really. They've got a great fan base. They're well run. They've got a cracking director of rugby who, I would have, before Ackerman joined.
He's head coach and Humphreys is director of
rugby.
Director
I would have been putting pressure on Humphreys to leave.
Even though Ackerman got nominated for director of rugby of the year.
I know.
So I would have been putting pressure on Humphreys to leave. But actually said, no, he knows what he's doing. They appointed the right, the right person at head coach. So, it's all worked out fine. Great head coach, good squad, well-built, good commercial side. Everything is in place at that club. I would not be surprised if this is the first year of a long stretch of Gloucester getting to the playoffs.
I would agree with that. I think they've built the right way to continually do it. They've just got to do it.
Yeah.
And they've got to improve every time they do it.
Yeah. I think if you were, an Ackerman and David Humphreys, and, they're good coaches, they've got a good coaching team around them, you would have said, right, we've got 2 weeks to prepare for Saracens, because they put out a second team in the final Premiership game. We've got 2 weeks to prepare for Saracens. Where should we focus a load of our attention? Let's do it on defending the aerial bombardment that we're going to get. And even with the preparation that I'm sure they put in, and even knowing that it was a massive focus, they still couldn't stop Saracens. They are just ridiculously good at it.
It's hard to do, though, isn't it? Like, unless you've got an Israel Folau in the backfield somewhere who can go up and contest those balls. They had Woodward, they had Marshall. Those are fullbacks in their own right. And yet, they had Sharples on the other wing who played fullback the week before. And even so, if that kick is exactly right and that chase is exactly right and they've got bodies all around it, they're usually reduced to just trying to tap it back, unless you can elevate to such a height, like an Israel Folau, and catch it above your head because of his NRL days and his Aussie rule days. I'm not entirely sure how you stop it.
And you're trying to stop Saracens, who they've got three of the best tactical kickers. Owen Farrell, obviously. Mm-hmm. Good as a fullback, he's probably one of the best, if not the best, in terms of that tactical kicking option. And Ben Spencer, under the tutelage of Wigglesworth,
who is over the best
over the past few years, well, Ben Spencer has come on leaps and bounds in terms of that kicking game. And then a kick is only as good as your chase, and the Saracens team are just so switched on.
Maitland and Williams are incredible.
And they're big boys as well, aren't they? They're like 6 foot something. I don't know. Definitely Maitland's big lad. I don't know what Williams is.
They just time it so well. And the phrase that Alex Sanderson used that's going to become a regular bit of rugby parlance now is kick to regather. That's what they call it. Kick to regather. Well, we do a lot of kick to regather. We do a lot of preparation on kick to regather.
To be fair, that's a better saying than resource the ruck. I've still not worked on resourcing the ruck is. So, they're just incredibly difficult to play against. And their game is far more. I don't know. So, they play amazing rugby. And they do play amazing rugby, but they play it in a different way to Gloucester's amazing rugby is partly from structure and partly from some amazing players. I kind of think. Think of it like this. It's kind of like, back in the day, if you bought a cake from a shop, it would be a boring cake. It'd be fairly high quality, but it'd be a boring cake. If you wanted a nice cake, you'd have to go to some sort of like artisanal bakers. Now, Saracens have somehow merged the two things, and they've come up with a cake, doing one like the ones you get in Costco, which look artisanal, but for all intents and purposes are artisanal, but it's still been made via a factory process. And that's what we've got with Saracens now. They've got great rugby via some sort of factory process.
They're a Costco cake.
They're a Costco cake. They're a Costco novelty cake.
Bit more expensive than a Costco cake.
And they are giant as well.
They're giant.
Everything's huge in Costco.
Costco cakes are giant.
Yep. Massive team.
A Saracens team who've lost their two first choice props as well.
I know, they're a kid. I one of the questions I put to Mark McCall before the game is the chink in your armour front row when you look at the bench. They had maybe 15 premiership appearances this season between them.
Well, even their starting front row, you might make an argument that it's a chink in their armour. It just seems like they've disregarded the scrum altogether. I mean, they win enough, that's fine. They get put under a lot of pressure. They by no means have the best in the premiership, despite their giant size. I just think they worked out they don't really care that much. As long as they win enough ball, what's the difference?
They are bloody brutal.
Yeah. And this was a very, very good, very Saracens-esque performance.
Yeah.
And differences from Exeter as well, which we'll come on to in a second, but difference that they started... they started badly, actually, because of the Morgan try after 2 minutes. But then they just got into their straps and for the whole of the rest of that half, it was just the Saracens show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And by half-time, they were... out of sight.
And the Tompkins try after straight
Strict
half
2 minutes after half time.
It was game over.
It's already game over.
It's a real shame that it was done so quickly. One question. On the morning of the game, Ben Kay put an article in the Times which was talking about Danny Cipriani and Alex Good. You've got the European Player of the Year, the Premiership Player of the Year, and both of them not looking likely to be going to a World Cup. And Ben Kay was totting up the merits of either. All the talk in the build up was about Cipriani. Farrell was classy. It, I mean, if Cipriani had done that little nudge through
the grubber kick for the Maitland try,
people would have been just...
I've rewatched that again because it's
good.
In one move, he goes for the dummy,
yeah,
which steps the defence up that extra yard. And as he's going for the dummy, well, it's not even a proper dummy because right. He just is so fluid. He just drops it onto his
wrong foot.
His left, yeah, drops it onto his foot and grubs it through, and it bounces up perfectly for Maitland, who's already read it and is in behind.
Yeah, it was beautiful. But anyway, so Benke was totting up the merits of either, and he said Alex Good should be above the pecking order over Cipriani for a World Cup spot because in a 31-man squad, his argument is, look how much Alex Good's played at fly half this season, including a European Cup quarter-final. Alex Good's a better fly half than Cipriani is a fullback, and if you want a third choice of either, Alex Good, your man. Discuss.
Yeah. I mean, it is...
I think it's a sensible option. Right. I'm happy with that. I would be very happy with Good going for that reason.
Good is a brilliant fullback. Good should be going as the starting fullback. There is arguments why Danny Cipriani shouldn't be the starting fly half. I kind of agree with it.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that. I think a lot of people were... If you made that statement before the game, as Benke did, a lot of people would be saying, no, you need Danny in there. You need Danny in there. Danny didn't have a great game in this. He's had a very good season.
Yeah, excellent
season. When the pressure came on in this particular game, he didn't have a great game.
Mm. Yeah, it's hard to run away from that, actually, isn't it? As good as he is, I was talking to one analyst somewhere in the league, and you know they pointed out that he's not got a great record in semis and finals. Maybe there is a point there. I mean, I don't think there is. I just think he came up against...
Well,
you know, he's been playing at Saracens for
God knows
how long.
Put him behind Saracens' pack.
And see what happens.
Swap Farrell and Sip,
that would be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah,
one we'll never be able to do. Just like we'll never be able to do an experiment of your no-knock-on rule.
Sadly. Just last thing on that one, though. I don't think you can take Danny Cipriani as a backup 15. You'd have to be insane. You really would. To think that you can take that much talent. And also, it wouldn't fit in with the dynamics either. And this is the reason why he can't get into the England squad, is because if you put him in the England squad, you have to reinvent your whole game to let him do exactly what he wants. And maybe there is more versatility in Farrell. I do not think he's as good a playmaker as Cipriani. But maybe he can play more different ways. And that could be the... That could be the deciding factor. So, you know, you either take him instead of Ford, but you can't take him as a backup. I mean, imagine, putting it the other way, imagine if he was a second fly half. Would you ever take Ford as the backup fullback? You'd be insane.
Yeah, you'd be mad. You wouldn't do.
Well, I wonder if Ford's going to end up being the third choice scrum half.
Because he only likes taking two scrum halves, doesn't he?
So, that's the sort of weird thing I think we're going to end up seeing.
I'd take three hookers and three scrum halves based on something which Phil said before the podcast.
Like, I would take three hookers 100%. I wouldn't actually necessarily take three scrum halves. Because I think you can rotate scrum halves in the lesser games more than hookers.
You can always take a rugby league hooker.
I'd take James Roby.
Yeah, James Roby, because he could play
he could
scrum
play
half
both.
Or hooker.
I'm not sure if you put James Roby in a competitive rugby union scrum international front row, I'm not sure he'd like it too much.
Is he bigger than Harry Thacker? Probably not.
It probably is similar. It's just he's never done it. He's never been
fine.
In a competitive
fine.
Scrum.
Yeah, I'd take James Roby as my third hooker slash scrum half.
This is Sam Burgess all over again. Are you not learning from the mistakes of the past?
No, if anything.
Sam Burgess did nothing wrong in 2015.
No, when he came off the field, they were winning.
Yes.
So,
and no one was talking about Jamie Roberts when Sam Burgess was on the field.
Exactly right.
Anyway,
exactly
right. Right, let's move over to the other semi-final.
Yeah.
Exeter. Again, it was just disappointingly one-sided.
But at least Exeter made it more interesting. We were in at half-time, and it could have been a different game.
Yeah.
Northampton had that kind of... Well, that brief stint before half-time, that 10-minute stint where you had the penalty try, the fish knock-on, slap-down... That was given as a penalty try, and RC Tuala's try after the magnificent bit of Hutchinson skill.
How did he do that?
And then you had the Reinach knock on 15 yards out from the line. Reinach, who has been sensational.
Yeah, exactly.
Who is, if you look back at throughout the Premiership this season, there's few players you'd want to have the ball more than Reinach 15 yards out with no one in front of him this season. and he knocks on. So a bit frustrating from Northampton's side for that, for not converting that chunk. But then the second half, and I said this last week, Northampton have got enough firepower up front to handle Exeter for a period. They don't have enough firepower to handle Exeter for the whole game. And in the second half, it became evident that Exeter were going to run away with it pretty quickly.
Yeah. This playoff appearance probably came a year too soon for Northampton. I mean, they were... I wonder, even though they definitely deserved their place there, they've played some great rugby, I do wonder if a Harlequins-type team would have put up a better fight. And I suspect they probably would.
Well, they were closer to 12th position than to first position.
Who, Northampton?
In the regular season league table. I believe that's an accurate stat.
So, like, you know, it's well-deserved to get there, so on and so forth. I just think it's a year too early. I'm going to be fascinated to see what this team looks like after another year under Chris Boyd, and also with some of the players that he wants coming in. And actually, you know, there are some players in here that he does want. In fact, a lot of them. And that's why they're playing. Like, Hutchinson wasn't involved really until he showed up. There's a bunch of other kids that have also come in. They've done extremely well, but it's just maybe a year too early.
There is a lesson to take, though, is that no matter how good or glittering or how much your attack fizzes, power, gnarly, nasty men.
Yeah.
It can trump that at any given time, as we saw this weekend.
Yeah, and big strong boys and the cohesiveness and the drill of the pack, because Gloucester are not short of big strong boys.
No, they're really not.
They are definitely not short, but they don't have that drilling and that cohesiveness that the Saracens pack have forged over years of playing at the highest level.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're playing at Saracens and you see one of your boys as first receiver at a forward, you know exactly what he's going to do next, or exactly the lines to run, or, you know, you just have a good sense of how to play together. So, you know, Gloucester needs to improve on that. As for Northampton, I was kind of hoping there's going to be an element here of, oh, we've never been here before, it's a younger sort of team, let's throw caution to the wind, and maybe we come up with the goods because we're not scared to play.
Again, if you take the half time, I think you'd be going, great, well, that's exactly where Northampton had done. And Narivoro was beating defenders as usual. By the way, he's the first player ever in the Premiership to beat 100 or more defenders in a single season.
Wow, that's quite impressive, isn't it?
It's one to bear in mind for fantasy rugby draft selections next season.
Noted.
Was it him and Cordero who topped the defenders beaten? Although Cordero is not eligible for consideration next season.
No, sadly.
When Tom O'Flattery scored.
Cordero as well, who's not been in... So he's not announced in the Argentine squad.
What?
There's a 46-man squad announced this week.
Is that because he's injured?
Well, there was talk of him potentially being back for this game.
He's got to be in the squad, surely.
Imhoff's not in there as well.
Oh, okay.
But there are... So Issa is, Nicolas Sanchez is, Figolo is, Herrera, who's playing at Stade Francais. So there are European-based players.
Those South American playboys, if they can get it together again for a World Cup.
No, because
as if they are going to... You're going to put all these alpha males together on tour in Japan for 3 weeks. Do you think they're going to get it together? I don't. I mean, they are going to get it together, but not on the rugby field.
So one thing, just I'm looking at Northampton's signings for next year. So they've promoted a few boys from the academy. The only notable forward that they're bringing in is Owen Franks. Mm. And now he will be very important.
I mean, yeah, they've got the good Franks now.
They've got the great Franks. I think they need a bit more than that in terms of steel up front.
Mm, yeah, maybe.
They could do with someone like...
Dylan Hartley?
Pickamalls.
Yeah, Dylan Hartley would be a great signing.
If you could get a Dylan Hartley fit, great signing.
But at this point, right.
They need a number eight. They need a big number eight. Harrison is a good, abrasive number seven.
The guy who, I mean, he's not big or abrasive, but I wish he'd played better or at all, would be, what's his name? The guy from Bristol.
Mitch Eady.
I think.
Come on, he's not the. He's not going to. You're not going to go.
He's not a Pickamalls type.
He's not going to win.
Who is a Pickamalls type?
Pickamalls, Billy Vunipola, or the South African whose name I forget.
Dwayne Vermaelen.
There's three of them on planet Earth.
Correct. Right? And they had one of them. 2 years ago, they had one of them.
They had it.
Carl Ferns?
Carl Furze would be a tremendous sign. I mean, good shout. You know, there'd be salary cap issues around that, but, you know.
Marquee player. If you're going to bring in one of those boys at number 8, they are going to be a marquee player.
Yeah, they'd have to be.
That's what I think Northampton are missing. Although the young lads that are coming through, Painter, Hutchinson has been brilliant. I
mean, Ribbons is a guy that has been good.
Ribbons has been injured.
And he's a very big man.
And then they've got Moon coming through as well.
He is a big boy, Ribbons.
Yeah, he's a big old unit.
You know, Hartley. Yeah, fine, he's playing for England. This, that and the other. And he seems to be largely fit for England. Do you not just cut your losses and get rid of him? If you're Northampton, it's a salary cap situation. Just get rid.
It's like the Tuolangi question, but with a different name.
Yeah.
Just get rid. It's not worth it. And I tell you who has learnt this the hard way this week about marquee, expensive international players is London Irish. Because, shock of all shocks, number seven that has dealt with horrific injuries in the past.
Over and over and over again.
Has now got a horrific injury. Yeah. And you've spent $400,000 on him. He's probably your marquee signing.
He'll be one of the marquee signings, definitely. And we said it almost word for word that like the concern over him sustaining another significant injury or multiple significant injuries next year means it's not really worth a risk.
Exactly.
You if you can get him fit for 15 to 20 games per season, it'll be a good signing.
He's playing in the
chance of that is unlikely.
He's playing only occasionally in the low intensity environment of the Pro 14, and he's still getting injured.
And admittedly, in the high-intensity environment of a Champions Cup final.
Yes, fine. But he only plays a handful of those games a year.
Yeah.
He's going to be asked to play almost every game. If he's fit, he'll be asked to play every game at full intensity for London Irish.
Well, that's what you want. Because there's no point having a marquee player who you're going to rest and play every other week, is there? Mm.
Exactly. They would be better off going out and finding the next Dan Thomas. You know, because as good as he is, Sean O'Brien is, he's not like 600% better than Dan Thomas.
I think Sean O'Brien in his prime was probably, I'd actually even say, possibly the best number seven on the planet.
Yeah.
Including McCaw in his pomp.
Warburton?
Including Warburton. I mean, he was so good.
But what's the point? It's a premiership. It's not international. You can do that for 5 games international. How about doing a whole premiership season?
Well, We can touch upon that a little bit more when we get onto Leinster. But in terms of Exeter, a couple of names that I think have had absolutely fantastic seasons.
Devoto.
Yes.
Okay. Devoto has been class.
And the other name I had in mind for Exeter.
I'd say Tom O'Flattery for some reason.
He's had a great breakthrough season. But Ollie Devoto was the one I was going to mention.
Yeah, 100% him.
Kvezic has been brilliant.
Kvezic and Devoto have been so good this year.
Kvezic, I in the past have been a bit negative about Kvezic.
We all have.
Yeah.
He was a penalty machine.
Yeah, and when Gloucester fans were calling for him to play for England, I thought they were absolutely mental. I probably still do at the time because I just never saw it in a Gloucester shirt. I have seen it repeatedly this season.
And at eight,
although he wears number 8, he doesn't play like a traditional number 8.
Well, here's the thing.
When he's got Armand and Ewers either side of him, he doesn't need to play like an 8.
So here's the thing about that, right, is... Like we said, there's only 3 or 4 class number 8s on the planet, okay? If indeed that. So if you can't get one of those guys, I honestly think the best thing to do is convert a 7 to an 8. Because if you don't get big carries, you may as well get work rate in your carries and work rate in defence. That's probably your second best option. Your worst option is to get a number 8 who doesn't do any of those things and is not world class.
Or a number 8 who has the size but doesn't have the explosiveness or the work rate.
The work rate is the killer.
Like... Callum Afoni, for example.
Perfect.
But yeah, Exeter were very, very good. They were very good, particularly in that second half, particularly when their forwards were starting to get more and more change out of a tiring Northampton pack.
Have you seen the Marvel movie, the last one?
No.
No, okay.
Or any of them.
Well, why would you? Because you don't have children of an age that would want to go and see it. That
is true.
That's mainly, yeah. So I took mine to go and see it. And there's one bit where Thanos, the bad man, says, "I am inevitable." And basically, I just want to... You could just have, like, BT Sports should just do a new graphic coming up with Thanos, "I am inevitable," when Exeter Chiefs are, like, 5 metres out from the line. "I am inevitable." Try.
Or even rename it the Thanos Zone.
Yeah. There we go.
extra cheese are in the Thanos zone again.
Yeah.
They are remarkable.
Thanos ball.
And they just keep. That's what I love about it. They are inevitable because you can't stop it. And even if you do stop a pick and drive, to what end? What, you drive it back 2 yards? Well, they'll just go again. They'll just start again and again and again.
And the parallel I wanted to draw was between Saracens' kicking game and Exeter's 5 metre out game. Northampton knew that was coming. They'd have done all that practice. Yeah. You still can't
the
stop
only
it.
The only thing you can do to stop that is not let them into the 5 metre zone to start with.
Yeah.
It sounds very simple, but simple isn't easy.
But they turned down loads. It'll be interesting to see what they do in a Premiership final against Saracens. Will Exeter still go for the corner?
100% they will, because we've seen it before.
We've not seen it in a Premiership final.
We've seen it against Saracens.
We have seen it against Saracens before, though.
Well, it was interesting the way Exeter, I think it was Matt Kovacic after the game, man of the match, he spoke about it, and he said last year against Saracen, the lesson they learnt is that they played a bit within themselves. They didn't play their normal game. So I'm tempted to go with you. And on our Premiership final preview pod, we'll and Negroni party announcement pod, we'll go into that. But I'm tempted to think Exeter will kick for the corner a bit at Twickenham. But we'll see.
Maybe. Oh, well, Exeter definitely will.
Yeah,
100%.
I think they will. I think they'll keep doing what's worked for them.
Yeah. Mm. What's more interesting to me this week, rather than the game on Saturday, is I'd love to be a fly on the wall to the intensity of how much these two train and what the atmosphere is like. Because for them, it's pretty much their only serious game in the Premiership of the season. So I bet
one of three serious games.
Yeah. What was the other one? Yeah. Hang on. Yeah. They meet each other twice and then once in the final. Yeah. So they've got three serious games a year where both can potentially get beaten. I bet training this week is going to be phenomenal to watch.
Well done, Saracens and Exeter.
Well done.
A bit. It's almost too predictable. Too predictable. And, unless you're JB and you predict a Gloucester win.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Right. Callum Sheedy's been called up to England.
What?
Callum Sheedy
has
been called up to England.
Are we talking sevens or is this...
For the England 15?
What?
Yeah.
And Cipriani hasn't?
Don't know.
England 15 squad named.
Come on.
19 minutes ago. Here we go.
Oh, here we go. Come on then.
No Cipriani.
What? So Callum Sheedy's in and Cipriani isn't?
So this is an England XV. So... This is not the...
Oh, come on, don't try and tell me in a World Cup year this bears no relation to what should happen in Japan. This should 100% be linked to to what happens in Japan.
Yeah, I'm just looking. So, interestingly, there's no Gloucester players in there. There are, however, Northampton players in there who... Because, obviously, no Saracens or Exeter players are available. So, let me just run through the lineup. So the forwards, this is an alphabetical order, not position order. So we've got Josh Beaumont, Ben Curry, Alex Dombrandt, which is good. Tom Dunn, hooker, Tom Ellis, six/lock. Ross Harrison.
Yeah!
Tamina Harrison, his brother. Yep. Paul Hill, Benno Obano, Aaron Painter, young Northampton.
Yeah.
Tight head prop.
Very good.
Will Spencer, Elliot Stook. And Tommy Taylor, your boy, Tim.
Yeah, my boy.
Harrison will shine.
I'm
absolutely shine.
It's good. Some good picks there. Some good young boys.
But there's no guys that are There's no guys that are in the
Piers O'Connor's EPS, in as well.
EPS, or the last England squad. These are all outside of the current England squad. So maybe that explains the Cipriani, but I don't get that. But anyway.
So yeah, none of them, you are exactly right. None of them are from the EPS.
Right.
Backs, Josh Bassett of Wasps, Simon Hammersley of Newcastle / Sale
Sharks, thank you.
Lord Hammer of Hammershire.
Ben Loder of London Irish, who's been playing in the Championship, scoring some very good tries. Joe Marchant, Quinns. Alex Mitchell of Northampton Saints, the young scrum half. Piers O'Connor of Bristol, and Callum Sheedy of Bristol. JB's boy, Marcus Smith. Ben White of Leicester Tigers, the scrum half. And Johnny Williams of Newcastle.
So,
Johnny Williams, good shout.
So it's a young...
Yeah, this
it's
is...
A the, real...
Okay, fine. I feel a little bit more comfortable about players being left out because I was expecting it to be a... This is the battle for... This is the battle for the remaining spots in the squad and the World Cup training squad. But this looks like it's completely separate, which I don't get. And hasn't he handed over the coaching to Jim Mallinder for this one as well?
Yes. So
well, at least he's not.
It's a little bit like Eddie Jones has gone. I don't want anything to do with this.
But at least he's handed over the coaching to Jim Mallinder rather than his evil lookalike. What's his name?
John Mitchell.
John Mitchell, who I met in a lift.
You mentioned you met him, but you didn't really say anything about it.
Yeah, I met him in a lift, and I tried to just say hi in the coldest, darkest, most killing eyes. I mean, the eyes might have been beautiful, but the stare was not. He's got some strange mannerisms, to put it mildly. I half expected him to hand me one of those Joe's business cards, which is nicely textured. he strikes me as
an American psycho.
Very peculiar character, to put it mildly.
And just looking at that squad, the overwhelming thing is they are young.
Yeah,
this
bears no relation to the England squad and Japan.
Except it does.
No, it doesn't.
It does, and I'll tell you why. It's not about the players that are playing for England, because clearly they are just completely, it's just kind of a throwaway squad. The people that are interesting are the English players, if there are any, playing for the Barbos. Because last year, it made Chris Ashton move to Sale Sharks.
Yeah.
So there are a couple.
Joe Marler, obviously the one that was announced last week.
Yeah, Joe Marler's in there. The only other one, I think, is Mark Atkinson of English.
Yes, you're right, Mark Atkinson. Isn't
Who'll likely be lining up alongside Malachi Fekitoa, All Black, in the centre for the Barbos.
Oh, that's a bit of a damp squib, that England squad. I'm a bit disappointed. I want to see...
The Barbar squad is a bloody good squad as well.
Yeah, the Barbar squad's really good, yeah.
They've got some dangerous players. I mean, some really dangerous players. So you'll have a back row, potentially, of Messam or Luatua alongside Villami Mata of Edinburgh and Fiji and Facundo Issa of Toulon in Argentina.
Wow.
That is a powerful, explosive back row.
Wow.
With Nairavoro and Nkosi and Fekitoa and Charles Piatau.
Crikey.
And Reese Webb.
Wow, yeah. They might give England a bit of a hiding.
It'd be an interesting game, that.
Right, I've got a rugby social game.
Yes, please.
Which is inspired, well, thanks to, you don't thank me, thank Tig Furlong for this one.
Oh.
Thanks,
Ty. So
I have seen a couple of these. I've not seen the full thing.
Good. So Tig Furlong last year, after Leinster won the Pro 14, did a Meet the Forwards on his Instagram channel, and it was quite tongue in cheek, very funny. And on the plane back from Glasgow this time, he's done a Meet the Backs. So he's taken a photo of each of the backs that started in the final, and he's written a few things about them to help you get to know them. So from the facts that I will give you about them, or the description that Tig Furlong gives you, you have to match up the description to the player. So the starting back line was Luke McGrath, Johnny Sexton, James Lowe, Robbie Henshaw, Gary Ringrose,
Christ.
Jordan Lama, Rob Carney.
I know nothing about these guys.
Well, just have to guess. Okay. So seven names. First one. Tig Furlong describes this person as caveman. He'd peel an orange in his pocket.
I don't understand what that even means.
I think it means he's tight. Is that
tight or keeps? Yeah, that tight or
as in you can't get his hands in his pocket. He'd even peel an orange in his pocket. I don't know. I'm
that doesn't really work for me.
Let's go with it.
But caveman, and he'd peel an orange in his pocket. Which one?
James Lowe.
Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Write it down.
Okay, give me one. Let me just get.
There's no way any of us getting any of these right.
I've seen a couple of these bits.
All right, so, okay.
Okay.
So,
next one. Beekeeper. Doesn't capitalise as much as he should off the pitch.
A beekeeper?
Beekeeper. I think she said beekeeper like his dad. Doesn't capitalise as much as he should off the pitch.
Right. Now, judging by the awfulness of the first description of peeling an orange in his pocket, is beekeeper a literal man who keeps insects, or is it some sort of funny thing?
Don't know. Does it suggest he's been stung by bees a lot?
He gets stung a lot? He gets stung by financial schemes? who's struggling with their finances?
Who's fallen foul of some pyramid schemes?
Yeah. Anyway, you can always...
Timeshare owner.
You can always come up. I'll remind you of what they are afterwards if you want to change your mind. So the third one. This one might be easier. He didn't have any description. He just wrote on the picture, red or yellow.
Yeah, got it.
Red
or yellow.
Got it.
I've got no idea.
Okay, the next one, he said, nickname, Birdneck.
got that one.
Yeah.
Has enough neck for 10 heads.
Very good.
Company accounts make interesting reading. That was that person.
Interesting.
Birdneck, enough neck for 10 heads. Company accounts make interesting reading. Okay, next one. Nickname, phone box or bungalow. Runs like he's mad at the grass.
Ooh, that could also be the same guy. Oh, I don't know. I've got no idea now. What's his name?
Phone box, bungalow, runs like he's mad bungalow. At the grass.
Bungalow means...
Nothing up top.
Yeah.
Okay, and the next one. Nickname, Ferret. Same haircut since age 10. His dad puts Tabasco sauce on the skirting boards to stop his dogs eating them.
What?
I know. We're getting to know the Leinster backs, but there you go.
This is so Irish.
And that's seven, isn't it?
That's six, I believe.
Six.
Oh, yes.
Who am I missing? Oh, I know who I'm missing.
Oh, I know who... Okay. All right, well, I'll make it easy because I haven't written down the other one or I've deleted it, whatever. The other one's Robbie Henshaw. So okay. Robbie Henshaw is not... So we've got six others.
Robbie Henshaw is the one that I had missing.
Well, Robbie Henshaw, I have him at six, at five.
Take him out, and there you go. So I'll remind you of what caveman, he'd peel an orange in his pocket.
Makes no sense.
Red or yellow. Beekeeper, doesn't capitalise as much as he should off the pitch.
Okay, four.
Birdneck and ferret. Dad puts Tabasco sauce on the skirting boards to stop his dogs eating them.
All right. So one is James Lowe because of the caveman.
Correct.
Yeah.
You got that as
I've
well,
got James Lowe.
Excellent.
Yes.
What have you got as the second one?
Gary Ringrose.
I think Luke McGraw would keep bees.
It is Gary Ringrose. 2-1 to Phil.
Okay, so number three is wrong because it's Ringrose.
No, three is Carney. Red or yellow?
Red or yellow. Why is Rob Carney? Because in the game...
Challenge on given a yellow, Hogg.
Which we'll come on to.
His challenge that knocked out Stuart Hogg. Have you not seen any of it?
No.
Oh, you've not seen it? Or bothered to read an article on it?
Or prep.
Okay, fine. So the next one, Phil, I'll just go with you, because I think JB's all going to be wrong now.
Ten necks.
Birdneck.
Sexton.
Yes, yeah. Johnny Sexton.
Two.
Did you see that? I love it. You said you saw Bod at the HSBC, the London Sevens. I love the picture that Bod consistently puts on social media of Johnny Sexton.
Is it the one, because Zeebo,
really young and
Zeebo
fat.
Uses the one where he's like 18 years old and really fat, like puffy cheeks.
Yeah. But yeah, Birdneck. Company accounts make interesting reading is Johnny Sexton.
Yeah.
Next one.
Phone box
bungalow.
Is Llama.
I've got Llama.
Yes, well done, JB.
Because you told me it wasn't Henshaw. Perfect.
And
phone box, you can... Sure, you could have got phone box as Llama.
Like, you can step someone in a phone box.
Oh, right. I thought it was more like, you know, like their physical size, like their shape.
Ah, okay. Yeah, Henshaw is more appropriate.
I'm trying to tackle a phone box.
Henshaw looks more like a phone box.
Or a bungalow.
Ferret.
Corny. Who was that?
Is McGrath.
Luke McGrath. Oh. Phil got them all correct. Well played.
I have, to be fair, I did when I was hungover on the train yesterday, I did flick through Furlong's Instagram. I think it was on, wasn't it?
It's very good.
Good quiz.
Whatever, whatever, whatever. Hey, there's a new code of rugby coming out. Have you heard about this?
I have.
Well, we'll tell you all about it after... You tell us about Akuma Rugby Tops and then Cornerstone, please.
Well, Phil, you tell us about Akuma Rugby Tops. We have had more people just messaging with pictures of them wearing their Egg Chasers Akuma
Rugby jersey.
They're
getting everywhere.
All over the world.
So if you want the most stylish green and yellow jersey, the best, most appropriate, sympathetically...
Oh, are Australia bringing back their native print jersey?
They are not.
No.
I can conclude they are not. If you want the most appropriate, sympathetic colour palette... Mm. And you want the finest merino wool or the finest athletic muscle fit jersey, go to akumashops.com/eggchasers. That's akumashops.com/eggchasers. And you can choose from the men's or the women's semi-fit, which is the athletic pro fit, or the sublimated retro jersey. The long sleeve retro jersey is lovely, isn't it?
And I have some further news on that. We might be having... another garment added to the range. So if you want to see what it is, you're going to have to log on.
Very good. Oh, very exciting. You can also go to our Twitter at Rugby Podcast. I think we've got a link on there as well, haven't we?
And we got a tweet from Mark Gelbert or Gelbert, who said he was taking Dad to the Monaco Grand Prix this weekend.
Okay.
Very nice. Very nice.
A couple of Negronis.
And he just spotted... in the bathroom of the flat that they have in Monaco, something that he's still been using since Mark got it for his dad 3 years ago.
What on earth would that be?
His dad still uses, with the initials CJJ on it, his Cornerstone razor.
Beautiful.
Nice.
Standing
proudly up on end, still looking sharp and well, that's stainless steel, that's going to last... 3 years and it's still there, and what a present for his dad. So whether it's a present for...
Hang on, does his dad own a flat in Monaco? Is that what they're saying? Is it a humble brag?
Mark, Mark's someone we need to, on your F1 Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark,
get in touch, Mark.
Yeah.
Slide into my DMs.
Point being, you could sort out your dad or yourself for just £4, as little as £4, six precision engineered Cornerstone razors, and a free engraved aluminium shaft with your initials engraved on it, sent to you in a presentation box, £4, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers.
I would. Right.
And we've had loads of people also sending us pictures of Negroni. Tesco have it reduced to clear at the moment, apparently.
Why?
I don't know.
Weird.
And, it's clearly growing in popularity. And... Ollie Waddington just said, take my money. A picture of him in a bar. It says Campari Negroni, only $5.95.
That was a legitimate ingredient as well.
Yeah.
Campari Negroni.
And Stu Kilby has sent a picture of, we need to know where exactly this is, but a London cocktail bar has a Mr. Fogg's Mechanical Mixologist.
Amazing, isn't it?
Makes your Negroni for you.
Perfect. I thought that might be in his flat or something, or in his house. I wonder if I can get one of those from.
So,
Pro 14 final. Pro 14.
Red or yellow? Are you happy with yellow?
So I was happy with yellow, yeah.
You guys continue to talk. I'm going to go to the toilet. I've not seen any of this.
Okay.
Back
yeah, I think... So, obviously, it's terrible for Hogg getting taken out.
Last game.
Last game for Glasgow. He looked in a bad way as well. Yeah. He hit the ground hard.
Yes.
I'm not sure if his head necessarily made contact, but he landed... on his just slightly past 90, so his shoulders took the front of the.
Had Nige given a red, would you have been upset?
No, I could have gone with a red.
I'm kind of with you. I think I'm pretty much with you. Again, I don't like these sort of marginal 50-50 calls where you'd go, yeah, I can see. I'm all right with it being a yellow. I could understand if it was a red, or I could see why it was a red. But equally, I'd have been all right with it was a yellow. Can we just like move on?
Yeah,
because it's just too much said about it. So we've said that. Nige, I thought, was a fine decision. He's had a lot of stick for it. One thing that has come out of this game is a lot of Leinster fans unhappy about Glasgow booing.
Yeah,
I've seen. There's a lot on Twitter about it.
I've seen a couple of bits on Twitter. I've not seen too much, though. So, were they booing during kicks, or was it just booing at any given moment.
Johnny Sexton's kicks. Bearing in mind it came down to those and for the win.
Sexton didn't kick particularly well.
No.
He missed at least one conversion and one or two penalties.
Yeah. But I would just like to say, because everyone likes to have a bit of a moan, but where is it?
Hang on, I've not seen the final, and I've just been told it'll come back. I assume you're talking about the Irish, are you, Tim?
There was a lot of people moaning about, a lot of Irish fans moaning about the fans in Celtic Park booing Johnny Sexton, or, you know, trying to put him off as he was kicking. But I've just got this. I've just got this, which I want to play, which is, remember when Dan Parks scored the winning penalty kick in 2010
in the Six Nations?
Anyone who remembers
Dan Parks is a true rugby fan. I remember Dan Parks.
And this is the Ireland fans when Dan Parks was knocking over the winning kick.
With a minute remaining then at Croke Park. Parks to move.
Nice and silent from the Ireland fans. So come on.
So I have no problem with either the time wasting, because it's their job to win. And let's face it, they nearly didn't. It was two points difference. So,
yeah, 3 points.
You know, they are... 2 points, was it not?
15-18.
I thought it was 16-18.
Nope.
Oh, well, doesn't matter. you know, they're in a proper dogfight. You know, the fact that Leinster need to take their time just shows exactly how good Glasgow are. But equally, I have no problem with the fans booing him for wasting time. So Storm in a teacup.
Yep, agreed.
And
agreed.
This is an interesting game. So I've not... We didn't get to watch the full game because we couldn't... Couldn't find anywhere to show it us as we were leaving.
Well, yeah, nowhere has Premier Sport, even in London. Nowhere has Premier Sport. And Premier Sport player is garbage.
Even round...
utter garbage.
Even round Twickenham, nowhere had Premier Sports. So,
nothing we can do.
We couldn't watch it live. I've read quite a bit about it. I've caught up on as many highlights as are available. But as of right now, half one on Monday, Premier Sports haven't put it on the Pro 14 YouTube channel. And there's no, unless you are a subscriber, there's no formal version. But anyway, I've seen as much as I can. One of the frustrating things for a Leinster fan, so Leinster, particularly in the second half, they controlled the game. They controlled territory and possession. Forwards were dominant, as we kind of expected. As you pointed out to me, Tim, last week, the Leinster pack will guide them home. And they did. But if I was a Leinster fan and an Ireland fan, I'd be a little bit... frustrated and a little bit worried that once again Leinster and a lot of the Ireland team under Johnny Sexton, who's not playing especially well, have failed to break down a tiring defence with a load of territory and a load of possession. So it was a good win for Leinster against a good Glasgow team, but I think they'll be a bit frustrated that they didn't make it easier for themselves by converting more opportunities towards the end of the game.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. But congratulations, good win.
Good win. Yeah. And Glasgow are a good team.
They are.
There was a moment in that second half where Hastings had like basically a four-man overlap. It was a little bit reminiscent of the Ringrose overlap against Saracens a few weeks ago. He had a four-man overlap and failed to give the ball and got swallowed up by the Leinster defence.
Saracens had that covered, according to JB.
You international rugby teams don't score for man overlaps, do they?
No.
10 yards out from the opposition.
Absolutely not. they would have covered it. I wouldn't worry about that.
Come on then, tell us about Rugby X. What are you talking about? So is this from some conversations you had at HQ?
No, it wasn't. I was just scrolling through the internet, as one does, and Rugby X came up. Now, Rugby X apparently is a five-man...
Is it like scantily clad rugby?
Yeah.
Rugby XXX?
You would argue that scantily clad rugby solves more questions than Rugby X does, but no, it isn't. So, I only know the basics of Rugby X, but this is effectively what it is. It's a five-man version of the game. It is played where there are scrums.
So, it's called Rugby X because there's 10 players.
Yeah, of course, that doesn't make sense, does it? Because it should be...
Rugby 7s would be called Rugby 14s.
14. Exactly.
And we just watched... Rugby 15s would be called Rugby 30s.
Leinster are the Pro 14 Rugby 30 champions.
Yes, correct, yeah. So, Rugby X doesn't work. And it also doesn't work in another way. Because there's already an X-7s tournament.
There's X-Rugby 7s.
X-Rugby 7s.
Which is an RFU initiative to make 7s more accessible and playable.
Right. Yeah, so
they've used the word X because it's cool.
Yes.
Have they done it in like a graffiti font?
It would not surprise me. So this has actually been played in the O2 Arena, so there's got some substantial... Someone is throwing money at it from somewhere, and I'd love to know why and where the money's... Who funds you? That would be my question. It's five-man sport.
Well, there's a lot of journalists that have spent the last few weeks doing nothing but that, so maybe they can just transfer easily across to rugby.
There are scrums. Three-man scrums, which means there's only two players not in the scrum.
With a scrum half, yes, yeah, so you have a scrum half, and then basically you give a one-on-one on the other side of the pitch.
Yeah, there are contested breakdowns. I think one from each side is allowed to come into the breakdown. There is limited kicking. Every kick has to be a grubber kick. It's played on a pitch broadly the size of a basketball court, and that is important. Well, if you think about a rugby field, if you play widthways rather than lengthways, you could get three games of Rugby X onto a rugby field.
So that's... Okay, fine.
Okay, and...
So, yeah, imagine a rugby pitch carved into thirds. Like mini on a day of mini rugby, basically.
Yeah. Yep. And, most importantly, director of Rugby X is one Ben Ryan.
So former Newbury coach.
Yeah, do you remember him? Did you? You played Ben Ryan?
Might have.
Yeah, so...
Come across.
I don't know
before.
If he invented it or if he's just the director behind it. And I just don't know what it's for. Now, apparently... It could be for two things. Number one, as was discussed on a Twitter thread, it is there so that you can teach school children the basics of rugby, but with limited resources. So you don't need to teach the full ruck. You don't need to teach... And also because it's smaller-sided games, you can have a few more of them. That's
not where the cash is, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's one way to look at it. But there are so many holes in that argument. I fathom to...
It's so they can take a live event to arenas around the world and make loads of cash.
Now, that might be the case. So if it's the case that maybe this thing looks great in the O2 Arena, which is where it's going to be played, more power to them. This could be like...
Or Madison Square Gardens or somewhere like that.
I can't imagine that's the case, can you? Can you imagine?
So one of the arguments, and I've not actually seen it, I was looking, trying to look this up before, but I'm sure one of the original arguments that Ben Ryan was making was a lot of the players on the Seven Circuit make hardly any money.
Yes.
Even the England boys who have been full-time for 10 years are on like 30K, something like that.
It's not enough for professional athletes, I agree with that.
And the Fijian boys, who are some of the most phenomenally talented and skillful athletes anywhere in the world, are getting absolute peanuts. So as a way of getting particularly some of the smaller nations... Those players some more money, that is it's a good ambition. Now, whether this is actually going to be successful and take off, I'm not so sure.
Well, it doesn't even answer that, really. Why on earth do you think you're going to make more money, right, from a brand new sport? What's that?
Sorry, just Ben Ryan the Lion.
Come on, where's what the chorus? Sorry.
It's okay.
No.
Perfect. Amazing.
Sorry.
It's okay. Ben Ryan. Love it.
I'd forgotten about that.
It is a truly great song. So it doesn't... So it doesn't fit the bill for expanding the game. Because if you wanted to run three games of Rugby X with one teacher, you'd have to have... Three simultaneous games, one coach, you can't watch. I mean, if you've ever done any rugby coaching at all, running small-sided games is great if you've got lads that know the rules and want to be there and want to self-improve. But good luck running three games of Rugby X with lads that don't want... Or girls who don't want to be there.
Okay, so it sounds like actually just a little format which could be used as a warm-up or as some fitness or some conditioning or something in that you could use with Talk H... In training,
yeah, I think it'd be a good training game.
You probably already do. Yeah,
have warm up games.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay money to watch it.
This is just for me. That kind of benefit is very limited because clubs already do that.
Yeah,
like you just play like when we were playing Withenshaw a couple of months ago in the social vets rugby. Just we automatically started playing a game. Very similar to this, just
thing,
as a warm-up.
Yeah, you do that thing, you kick the ball back and forward a couple of times, then when a few more people turn up, you end up having a chat, standing in a circle, passing a ball, and then someone goes, should we play touch?
Yeah, exactly. And then you kind of begrudgingly go...
Now, kids don't automatically do that,
yeah,
I understand, but teachers can very easily get them to play so a similar game.
A bunch of kids that probably don't want to be there trying to play Rugby X. And also, Rugby X requires five players, allegedly. It doesn't. It requires seven because you don't have lineouts. You've got to have the sub throwing the ball. Now, you need two subs, one on each side.
Ah.
Yeah. The sub throws in the ball.
There's no lineout.
That sounds unnecessarily complicated. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's fine if you've got a professional.
Line out. Just have like a rugby league tap pass.
Is kind of what this is, but the theory is you have one of the subs doing the tap and pass or just pass.
So you need one of your subs on each side, so that's two subs, and you need four subs in total, two from each side to do both. Yeah. And if you've divided your pitch up into three, do your subs stand on the on the other field where there's been a game? I mean, it does not work in any way.
Well, so I genuinely think it's the financial imperative you're talking about. There's an opportunity,
like that.
And you're actually going, hold on, okay, so we've got these outdoor sporting stadiums that we take sevens to. How could we have it like a gig? Or like one of these, you have these kind of five-a-side legends football things that go around, don't they?
Yeah, I don't want to watch
that
either.
They go to arenas and you have five-a-side games with football. But I think that's basically what it is. It's like, how can we make a bit of cash by taking it around to indoor arenas, put it on at night, put it on any time of year?
But why would you ever assume that would make more money than the seven circuit?
Well, it's not about making more money, it's just...
Or some money, I guess. I mean, I don't see it. And also, you only have marginally more space. I think 1 metre squared more space than you do if you play 15s.
So that's interesting, because I couldn't find anywhere on the website the size of the pitch. I guess you can assume it's roughly the same as a basketball court.
Yeah, I've actually got the measurements of a pitch from somewhere online.
American football, they have a kind of smaller-sided indoor version of American football that...
Yeah, arena football.
Arena football, yeah.
Yeah,
and so that's kind of like that, basically.
Maybe. The other thing as well is they're getting ex-sevens athletes to play it, which is fine, but this clearly isn't a game for sevens players. It's a small-sided pitch, small sides. You want powerful men. You want... right, you're not going to win this with...
The X's and Cheese type five.
You want...
Yes.
You want the X's Cheese type. Or you want Naira Voro and Cordero.
Yeah, and Cheslin Colby.
So this... Cheslin Colby and Cordero, Nadolo and Naira Voro, and then
anyone else.
This is how you set up your Rugby X team, okay? You have three of the biggest, most powerful men you can think of. So you reckon the Exeter Chiefs front five. I would say the Leinster front row.
Yeah.
Plus Naira Voro.
Plus Cheslin Colby or Cheslin Cordero. Colby.
No, incorrect. You need a tackler. And I'll tell you why. So you need either Halfpenny, who would offer nothing else other than this.
Other than tackling.
Yeah, or maybe a Jack Berger. Jack Berger could probably
do someone like Tipperick.
Tipperick might be...
Or Pocock or Hooper.
Yeah, someone like that. And the reason you need that is because you're going to have a scrum. And at a scrum, you're going to have a scrum half pass to another guy who's going to go one-on-one. So you want your Naira Voro playing, right?
Let's go one-on-one.
On the one-on-one. But the guy he's going up against can't be another Naira Voro. He's going to have to be a Lee Halfpenny.
It certainly can't be a Cordero.
It cannot be a Cordero. So you can have your one-on-one guy. You're better off having a Naira Voro because you can do things in the loose. But then you're going to have a defensive guy like a Halfpenny who just doesn't miss his tackles, because otherwise it's a disaster. I actually think this is an answer to a problem that's never been asked. And I also think that it's utterly pointless. Why not just play a smaller-sided game of rugby league? I mean, rugby league does all these things. You know, you concentrate on the pass, you concentrate on the carry, and you concentrate on, well, that's it, the run. I mean,
has rugby league ever tried a smaller-sided version?
Yeah, they dominated the middle side, the Middlesex sevens.
Did they not have like a rugby eight or something? Rugby league eight.
Yeah, like rugby league eight. Why can't you play rugby league on a small-sided pitch?
So, again, agree with all that, which is why it makes much more sense to look at this as an alternative revenue stream for some of the smaller nations, which is what I'm looking at it as. And in that regard, it makes sense.
And that would make sense why Ben Ryan's interested in it, because he's managed the Fiji side who got peanuts for being the best team in the world.
I
can't see it becoming a big thing. As in, I'm just looking at the tickets.
So the way
I can't see people, I can't see that many people paying 50. Well, the cheapest ticket is £30 or £20 for a half-day ticket.
Well, Ryan,
if you were going to buy a ticket for something, it would be tour. For a live podcast at Twickenham.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I would rather listen to me speak about Rugby X than watch Rugby X. That's how much appeal it has. Ben Ryan himself on Twitter has said it is for schools and places like that with limited resources. Actually, you need a ton of resources for Rugby X. Go and play. If you're a school teacher and you're listening to this and you're thinking, how do I get my kids into rugby? Rugby League 10s, Rugby League 8s, Rugby League 7s, Rugby League. Rugby League has never had a problem penetrating into working class areas, believe it or not. That is the game that will convert people into Rugby 15s. And even if it doesn't, you're going to have some great Rugby League players, which is important. You do not... Listen, if you're going to be a professional athlete, you do not want to be a Rugby X player. It is a road to ruin. Don't do it.
Well, we'll see.
So I admire the...
the endeavour.
Hey,
yeah, absolutely.
The way it's described to me, it could be... Well, the idea is it could be the next Kabaddi. You know, they might be playing in space-age stadiums somewhere, small-sided games, and it might be huge in India. Yeah, and if that happens, more power to them.
Yeah, great.
It's great.
Absolutely.
I just don't for the life of me think it will.
Kabaddi. Remember when that was on Channel 4?
Well, that's exactly how it's described. Like, do you remember Kabaddi was on Channel 4 on, like, mud pitches? Like, sort of. And now it's played, you know, if you go on...
That was a mad game. The reason they said Kabaddi was to prove that they weren't breathing. Because yes. You had to hold their breath, basically. They had to not breathe in the time. They had to get to the line, the opponent's line, before they had to breathe in again.
And Kabaddi, and by the way, I watched the Kabaddi World Cup not so long ago. And the outfits they wear are horrific. Like, I think they should be dressed more like MMA fighters than...
What outfits do they wear? It used to just be like
polo shirts and like...
Isn't it mixed?
Dunlop
as well?
White Flash.
Isn't it mixed? Friends.
Mixed? As in women play?
Oh, is it men and women? Or was it...
Ooh, no, I don't know. I doubt it.
No, it can't have been.
Rugby X certainly can't be mixed, because stopping Don Armand on the game line is going to be going to be somewhat of a challenge.
No, he's no good at carrying in heavy traffic.
Oh, yeah.
Right, we've got two more items on the agenda. Number one, you must have seen, we predicted the future yet again. The Danny Cipriani, the Sips Slip Mix.
Oh, how did we do it
going
again?
Going, which of course will be transitioning over the summer period into the Sips Grip Tips, as exactly as we predicted.
So,
thank you to everyone who sent a picture of it to at Rugby Podcast.
Danny
very much enjoyed that.
In this very, very warm week, was wearing gloves in training.
Would you like to know why? Because I know I have the inside scoop on this.
Because they were slippy to make him.
Our idea was
grippier.
You have Sips Slip Mitts, which are slippier than normal hand friction, to mean that when you go without the gloves, you're better.
It's a training system, isn't
yes.
it? You start with the Sip Slip Mitts.
Yeah.
So in training, it's harder. And then when you get to a game, you add the Cipriani
grip tips.
Yeah,
right. So you're more grippy. I mean, it's one of the best.
It's a graded training hierarchy.
Did he do it?
Well, I would like to also say that Danny Cipriani appreciates our thinking. I can tell you that much about the grip slip tip mitts and the concept. But the reason he had sip mitts. The reason that he had him on is because he had an injured hand. It was to protect his hand all this week. But obviously,
interesting.
I didn't want to wear one because that.
Then you know which hand it is. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's why he had his.
Or he looked like Michael Jackson.
So that's why he had his gloves on. But obviously, you didn't want to say that before the game because you didn't want anyone to.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he had a small hand injury.
And the other thing.
World Rugby High Tackle Decision Making Framework that was announced earlier today.
God, that is a sexy sentence. Say it again.
World Rugby High Tackle Decision Making Framework.
God, who are all these people? Go on.
Have you seen it?
Oh, I know about it because you read it to me on the train.
Well, so this was before it was announced. So Alex Lowe in the Times on Saturday had a bit of an announcement. Well, it was preempting this, which is... So it's a framework, it's a series of questions that the referee must ask themselves to determine whether a high tackle is a shoulder charge or a high tackle, whether it was dangerous, whether it's dangerous and whether then should it be a penalty, a yellow card or a red card.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite interesting that they've done this. So it's been branded as solving two problems. At the highest level, it's solving two problems. First problem is consistency of decision-making, which is something that we've long complained about. And the second one, which is an obvious one, is to further try and reduce concussion, which is obviously an important and a good thing to do. The decision-making side of it is something that we've long argued for and long said. I wish there was a clearer set of almost questions or... set of logical processes you could go through. And in the past, I've always said, like, in my head, I kind of ask myself multiple different questions to try and make a decision.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I kind of knew it was never written down for referees anywhere. So I think this is actually, in my mind, this is a good step. We've not seen it play out, but the way the video of this plays out, and fair play to World Rugby in doing this, they take some high-level, controversial decisions which were incorrect in the past. The Owen Farrell tackle on Andre Esterhazen in the Autumn Internationals last year. There's a New Zealand versus France, a double high tackle headshot. There's an Alan Wynne-Jones headshot against the Lions. Yeah. For the Lions against New Zealand. So they're looking to reduce the opportunity for these controversial decisions in future.
So there's a couple of things. Yes, I broadly agree with you. There's a couple of things. I think there will always be unintended consequences with these things, and I think there's going to be that there will end up being a lot of decisions which are made which don't use a kind of feel for the game, because there are a number of times tackles where players do wrap the arms, but because of the nature of the collision, well, they only wrap one arm that's round one side and the other one's a bit shorter. But basically, the bottom line is there's a lot of players that make good intention and the right movements, but it doesn't physically happen, because, say, Esterhazen bounced off, and so Farrell's wrap was after he was already falling backwards.
So they actually try and clear that up.
Yeah, go on.
So what they do, the first decision that the referee has to make is it a shoulder charge or a high tackle? So a shoulder charge is where the leading shoulder, and they actually use that tackle in it, where the leading shoulder, the arm of the tackler is either in a sling position, so it's in your front so you can't make a wrap, or it's behind his body. And you might then bring it, like swing the shoulder in and then bring the arm round. But this is the Farrell one. His left arm, his non-tackling arm, wrapped, and that was what Angus Gardner used to say, he's wrapped. His right arm was behind his body, so he led and swung with the shoulder. So they are clearing that up. If you watch the video, it's quite a good definition.
That's good. That sounds good. The big issue with this I am going to have is having to listen to TMOs and refs go through a bloody flowchart.
Yeah,
it is a flowchart. Yeah. It definitely is. Now it should. It might be clunky at the start.
Yeah.
Let me rephrase that. It will be clunky at the start. What I think it will give is it will educate everyone, including fans, kind of serious fans like ourselves, and casual fans who watch rugby a few times a year for the big games. So hopefully it will allow them some transparency into the referee's decision-making process.
Yeah.
I might be wrong about that, but I'm quite optimistic. I think a lot of the things that World Rugby do are certainly well-intentioned.
There's no doubt they're well-intentioned.
I think this is actually quite well thought through, but I could be proven wrong.
I do get it. It sounds like let's make things more litigious, not... But I get it. I get it.
This is approaching the problem from the other end of the telescope, so to speak, right? What we first had is a crackdown on players. Largely successful, but what they weren't successful on is a crackdown on referees. So now what this is, I think, is a crackdown on referees, because there are decisions out there where they should have obviously been cards or at least penalties. For instance, when Owen Farrell stole a game from South Africa by high-shotting whoever it was. Now, that to me...
Esterhazen,
right? Angus Gardner got that clearly wrong, and I think this is really frustrating the powers that be at World Rugby, because they know, and I know, and anyone with half a brain knows that that was a penalty. So they've got to now regulate the thought processes of the referees to come to the conclusions that they want, so the game looks exactly as their marketing department has described it to them. And that's what we've got.
Because Angus Gardner's decision was based on the wrap of the alternative arm.
He wrapped his arm. So it's never been in the laws until now. It's never actually been specified.
Both arms.
What you're looking... No.
Go on.
No. It's never been specified until now that... What you're looking at is the arm attached to the leading shoulder, one that makes contact. Because Owen Farrell, the mitigating circumstance that Angus Gardner went fair on, and actually the reason why I say, just get on with play on. You can talk about high or not, but not about the wrap, because he definitely wrapped with his left arm. But what World Rugby have clarified is, Doesn't matter what the other shoulder arm, which I just get confused. I understand the intention's great. I like the clarity. I crack down on the refs.
These pesky refs are reffing, using their knowledge accumulated over a lifetime, a career of rugby.
If we'd never had Twitter, this wouldn't have happened.
One of the phrases. Have you watched the video? Because one of the phrases.
Which video?
The video for this, the decision making framework video. one of the phrases they use actually a few times when they're talking about the decision of whether it's going to be depend on the severity, a yellow card, a red card, or a penalty, is referee's discretion. And they look at the final decision is based around aggregating or mitigating factors. So, is there any aggregating factors that make this a worse incident, as in if the tackler had full line of sight and plenty of time to make the decision and the player's running in upright and you still hit him in the head with a shoulder, aggregating. If the player ducks at the last second, that's a mitigating factor, or if the tackler's unsighted, that's a mitigating factor. But one of the phrases that they use on the video numerous times is referee's discretion. So there is some discretion within the framework for the referee to apply their experience and their knowledge.
Fine.
Sorry, I was just laughing then, and I hate to take this away from this very, very serious conversation of the rugby diligence enforcement framework for high tackles, or whatever it's called. But literally, as I was scrolling through Twitter, what would pop up? But Rugby X. So so we've got both sides of the argument covered. The Rugby X tournament is in... It did say before. I think it's September.
Or October, is it?
October. And do you want to know the prices?
Yeah.
You can have a whole day out.
I said before, £20 is the cheapest half-day ticket. £108 is the most expensive ticket.
Well, it doesn't have the half, but yeah, £108. £38 is the cheapest. £58 is the cheapest full-day ticket. If you want to check it out yourselves and have a look, and you make the decision rather than listen to us, do that.
Save your money and come to our live show.
Yeah, quite. but here's how they marketed it. So they've given all the players nicknames.
Yeah, have you not seen this? Their Twitter.
I've literally just seen it now. So Jean Pascal, the Danger Man. Stephen Perez, the Magic Man.
Are they going to have entrance music when they come out?
I hope so. I mean, I do hope so.
And players will swap teams.
They'll
swap teams in a WWE kind of way.
The Irish have got nicknames.
Oh, my God. They should get the WWE commentators to do it. This could be a career-ending manoeuvre.
Special move. We've got Emmy Lee Murphy-Crowe, the star. Emily Lane, the creator. Lucy Mahal, the talent. And they've actually got some big names. So I think there's Carlin Isles, who will be playing. Oh, no, Perry Baker's playing, sorry, I should add.
Speed stick.
Can I just point out, completely the wrong types of players to be playing, but never mind, carry on. What would you like your nickname to be?
I'm just looking through them. Emma Uren is the engine.
The engine.
Phil Burgess, the powerhouse.
Uh-huh.
Holly Atchison, the playmaker. I think Dan Norton's the legend. Yeah, there we go. Dan Norton's the legend. Tom Mitchell, the skipper.
Harry Minolti's the explorer. And Billy Dardis, the leader. Jordan Conroy, the step. I'd be the penetrator. you could be the line bender. Tim?
The professor.
The professor. The professor.
Love it.
Lucio Gonzalez, the future. So, in terms of him, don't bother going to buy a ticket to watch him until next year.
Yeah,
when he's the present.
Next year
I am the present.
Next year will be his year, just like Gloucester's year. Could be next year.
Hey, it looks like a good day out.
It'll be a good fun day out.
Get a watch.
But come to our live show instead, which we'll tell you about on the next podcast when we preview the Premiership final. And the Premiership final. Basically, that's it. So we'll see you on the next pod.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.